This is Robert Stark. I'm joined here with Brad Sinclair. He is a Eurobeat producer and musician from Italy. Brad, it's great having you on the show.
Thank you very much. Here I am. Thank you for having me, though.
And I'm also joined here with my co-host, Pilliter.
Hi, Brad.
And it's kind of a funny story because...
Hi, Pilliter.
I originally met Pilliter because he contacted me randomly telling me, you got to get Brad Sinclair on the show.
Yes.
Oh, really?
I'm a huge fan, and I thought maybe in Robert Stark's power, he would get you on, and then I became the co-host, and then through my power, was able to get you on. So I'm a huge fan.
So you finally made it, man.
Yes. And I got you on the show.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much. It's amazing.
Brad, you've been recording music since about 1990. Can you talk about some of your early influences? Was it like the 80s Italo disco?
Yes, it's a long, long story, guys. You might know it, but to make a long story short, I've started I like to define myself like a rocker in disguise. You know what I mean? Because I've been into heavy rock and heavy metal and rock stuff for years. You know, and but I've been touring in Canada with my old band called Layout. And as I got back to Milan, Italy, in the late '80s, my good friend Alberto Contini, which is the inventor of the whole business around Eurobeat with Avex. He called me up and said, "Yo, Brett, why don't you try make some dance?" I'm involved with Dave Rogers. At that time, back then, he was called Aleph.
Yes.
You might know that.
I love his records.
And yeah, I know. I know that you know it. And anyway, I was, embarrassed because I was in rock. This guy, Alberto, was in rock too, and I was in scandal. You know what I mean? I was, what dance music? What? No way, man. What the fuck? No way. I'm not going to do dance at all, you know? But he was very, very hard on this, and he told me something like, rock doesn't pay at all, you know what I mean? And this is 90s, early 90s, and we need to try this. And he gave me an Aleph album. It was a greatest hits called Take My Life, if I remember well. And this album, I found it very good in melody lines. It was very well made, and I was surprised about that. And I said, wow, I can do this. It's not evil, you know what I mean? It's not the devil. I can do that. And a couple of weeks later, I was in together with Alberto, and I've been composing my very first virginal track called Tango Tango.
I love Virginelle, by the way, and I love that Hot Love and Emotion
album. Okay. And after that, the second track I have ever made in Eurobeat field was King and Queen by King and Queen.
Yes.
Think about that. And after that, Alberto said, didn't I tell you about it? So let's go with it. You now have this big success in front of you, which was King and Queen. So everything started by that one, and like this, exactly like this.
How much of an influence did Italo Disco have on you? And would you say that Eurobeat was sort of like a 90s continuation of Italo Disco?
that's a very good question, because I have a secret to tell you about. I actually do not like dance music at all. not at all, but I'm not in dance. I'm not listening to dance music when I'm on my car traveling and on an airplane. But Eurobeat surprised me, impressed me at that time. And I didn't recognize some ingredients from the classic Italo disco from the 80s. You know, you guys say, we say Savage, but you guys say Savage, right?
Yes.
Probably is that, yeah. Brian Ice.
Oh, yeah.
And, oh yeah. And
have you heard of the song Chatelet?
Sorry?
Have you heard of the Italo disco song Chatelet?
Oh, yes, of course.
Okay. That's actually there's a funny story behind it, because there's this like online sensation called Pepe the Frog, and the song, the album cover was from like 1985, but it had a frog on it, and the band was
I didn't know that.
P.E.P.E. And now it's become this massive online sensation recently. do you know the story behind that song originally?
No, I didn't. I didn't know about that. But it's funny. You guys know many things about the Italo disco. Huh?
Oh, yeah. I have a huge collection myself, and everything you're talking about from, you know, Edding Huntington and Ken Laszlo. I think on your Instagram met Ken Laszlo. I thought that was really cool.
Oh, yes. He's a very good friend of mine. Gianni Coraini is a very, very good friend of mine. I met him in May. Maybe you guys know that we had a very big party here in Milan in last May. 2016, and I've met a lot of old friends that I didn't met since many years, like Ken Laszlo, Domino, and Dave Rogers, and many people. And I met him back again after many years over there, and it was very, very nice to meet him again. So I was I was on an Italo topic, Italo dance topic. So you know, I've always been trying to change the Italo dance, the typical Italo dance ingredients, since the beginning, when Alberto told me, like I said before, go ahead, this is the deal, go ahead and try to make the best, you know, your way, your version of this, and so I did, and as soon as I started, I have been trying to change, to put some new ingredients, like changing the kick drums, putting out the snare drums. I didn't like that at all.
It's a much more kind of a sped up version. It's very fast paced, very high energy.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, Italo dance and Eurobeat, they have the same origins, right? But I've always been trying to change it and to transform it and dragging it to by my side, not a rock side, but something different, something that could be sound live, like a live band. Which is my trademark, you know, my you can recognize it, you know, because that's my signature, and that's my opinion on Eurobeat and Italo dance.
Did Eurobeat have a much larger following in Japan than it did in Europe?
Oh yeah, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely, but you know, in Japan, Eurobeat is they used to call it Enka,
yes,
Enka, which means traditional or typical, you know, something like that. Many people in Japan, they don't even know that Eurobeat is made in Italy. many people there think that it's Japanese music. Think about that.
It's the name too, Eurobeat, right? It's referring to you.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Oh, exactly. My own name is Buretu Sinkuleru, something like this.
Yep.
You know? Yeah. So they think that we are all Japanese, you know what I mean? I mean, not all of them, but many of them, they don't even know that Eurobeat is made in Italy. So each and every time I need to explain them that, you know, I'm Italian, but did you really wrote Night of Fire did you really write Night of Fire yes, but is that you? Yes, but you're not Japanese. I know I'm not Japanese, but you know, that's the deal, but it is, you know, they don't even know. So in Europe is much more a recent it's a kind of a side effects from technology. You know, Eurobeat became much more famous thanks to internet, and in Japan started a small decline. You know, a small inverse, you know, trend. So the people is used to be in Japan. It used to be in Eurobeat, in dance, and in very fast speed. You know, but in the rest of the world, it's something that sounds new, still nowadays. Yeah. You know what I mean? So that's a very weird aspect of a musician's life. You know what I mean? It's very weird to me. It's very unexpected.
There's this American comedian named Sam Hyde. And his Twitter name is Night of Fire, so I think he's obviously a big fan of the Eurobeat genre in your work.
I didn't know about that, but happy to hear that.
Yeah, it's where I learned about Eurobeat for a couple of sources. I was on an internet website called ytmnd.com, and there was an internet fad called it was called Low Running, and they would play the song Running in the 90s, which featured in mm-hmm. the anime Initial D. And so that song, I think you produced, correct?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay.
Running in the 90s, no, I didn't do it.
Okay, who did that one, actually?
It was my partner in Delta, Mr. Newfield.
Okay, yes, Newfield, because you work real close with Newfield. Right.
Yeah, of course.
And eventually that led me to Delta Dance and some of your recordings. And
Yes.
And so, but here's the thing. On the internet, Eurobeat, especially with the anime Initial D, which is well known in America, got, I know some of your tracks were in that too, and so that got really famous and got certainly the music of Eurobeat out there. It seems like everyone found it through the internet. It wasn't until later that I had, I actually had one girlfriend, she was from China, and she said that Eurobeat was actually quite popular in some China. And it's funny. And then I had another girlfriend who was also Asian. She told me the same thing too. I was like, wow, is this Eurobeat thing? It seems to be exclusively in the Asian dance clubs.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's exactly what I was talking about. It's very weird happening now because thanks to technology, man, I'm becoming much more popular now than back in the 90s. This is very weird, you know, because in Japan, the business is almost over, as you might know. But in the rest of the world, it sounds like a new thing.
Yeah.
Think about that. And it's amazing for that. I'm still now receiving many requests from fans all over the goddamn planet, man. Requests for doing some tracks of theirs in a Sinclair style, you know. So I'm receiving demo tapes like 3 or 4 per week. But this never happened before. You know what I mean? This is just a very, very strange thing.
And the internet, it's bringing back a lot of these, like, old subcultures. I know with, like, 80s music, there's, like, this genre called New Retro Wave, which revives, like, the 80s style. And a lot of Americans online are associating, like, a 90s Eurobeat also with the whole kind of a vaporwave genre, which has a lot to do with Japanese culture and features a lot of electronic synths in the songs. Are you familiar with vaporwave?
Not very much. I all know about vaporwave. I just know maybe 2814 stuff. Is that right? Is that correct? It's an artist called 2814. Is that right?
I think, well, there's one called Macintosh Plus. She's getting very much of having, and I'm not real well of the vaporwave stuff too, but it's everywhere on the internet. And basically, you get samples, you slow them down, and you reference.
Yeah, I know. Vaporwaves. Yes. Mm-hmm. I know. Yes, but you know, I think that basically Eurobeat is made on melody lines, you know, and vaporwave is made on built on sounds, slow it down sounds, atmospheres, not melody lines. So this is the big difference, and I don't know how Eurobeat can influence vaporwave, actually. I don't know. I don't even know if there are some influence out there, you know.
How did you meet Butch Ballax and came up with the hyper techno genre?
He was working here in Italy as a DJ in a discotheque called La Diva up in the mountains over here. And it was winter time, and me and Alberto Contini, very in the prime time of ABC label, we heard about this guy DJing all the time, like a crazy guy, you know. We in Italy, we were not used to have this kind of weird black guy doing crazy stuff, you know. It was early 90s, so. And we went there at La Diva, and we found him there, acting like a maniac, you know, DJing like a screaming and putting on some very good music. So we started talking to him, and, you know, we got a project. We want to mix some dance stuff with heavy metal, hardcore, and very hard rapping, very speed rapping. Are you interested in it? Would you come with us and try this? And he said, "Oh, what? Yes, absolutely. Hell yes." And so we did.
Yeah, because that Metal-Minded Maniacs, when, you know, Fuck All Y'all, that's a really good song. It reminds me of something reminiscent to, like, The Prodigy or Atari Teenage Riot, that very 90s aesthetic, certainly.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what I was trying to do, you know. But my way, like I said before, my way with putting some real guitar in it and mixing things, metal, hardcore rapping, and high speed, and very low kick drums, very high volume on hi-hats, and all that. But anyway, Faye Fuck All Y'all is my favorite hyper-techno track ever, still now.
I love the hyper-techno releases you had in the past few years from that collected most of those hyper-techno releases. They certainly have a certain energy compared to the earlier Delta Dance releases, which is more hard and edgier. I love Crazy Train. I love Techno Violence, I think it was.
Hyper-techno. Yeah, Techno Violence. Electro-violence.
Electro-violence, that's yes. Right. That's right. Slipping away from me. I had those when I was a teenager, so...
No problem.
So you recently had a live show in Japan with Dejo. How did that go?
I was surprised about that, because I didn't expect all that reaction from the audience and from the people. It was 3 years since last time I was there. And, since the very beginning, I had the feeling that something, I don't know, man, something has changed, or that was the right moment with the right person in last October. And, very, very good, very, very good. The whole experience, 10 days, 9 days over there. The boss, Avex boss, came to attend the show, to see the show. Max Matsura, you guys know him?
Yes.
He actually invented Avex. And he was there. Nico had the show. The building was packed, man. Really, really, really. And the Avex staff was amazed about that. I've met many, many old friends from Avex. Didn't meet since many, many years over there, all the old staff, A&Rs, and it was absolutely a very, very good experience this time.
When did you meet Dejo? And it seems like his voice has defined a lot of your music, especially that you two work together. And whenever you hear Dejo's voice, especially in a lot of Eurobeat songs, they'll maybe associate with Sinclair, which I have with Runny in the 90s.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you guys felt this, because that's totally true, and I mean, this is the stark truth, I would say. And yeah, because Maurizio is real name. Maurizio is the best singer I've ever worked with, actually, in my whole life. even in rock, heavy metal. He's such a talented guy, and he can sing each and every song ever made, no matter what genre, right? Genre. And you know, when I compose a track, I've always been thinking of his voice. No, even if it's gonna be Bon or Nando or another guy is going to sing the track, you know. And his voice inspires me all the time. And anyway, to answer your question, I met him in Mantova. Mantova is a small town where ABC was based back then in early 90s. He was used to sing for Dave Rogers as a freelance. I met him there, and he was love since the beginning, you know. And we're still together. We work very, very, very cool together, and I'm very satisfied working with him. Still now, man.
It's like the songs are very catchy, especially I love singing Boom Boom Fire and Burning Love. There's also a lot of lyrics, especially in the para-para and Eurobeat culture, like especially about fire or these themes about dancing. It's certainly very formulaic, and especially with Djo, you might have one song about a speedway or Super Speedy Boy or something about cars. Yeah. It seems to be, is there like a writing process where, certainly that you've produced so much music and time, it just comes out immediately, like you can make a song in a day?
Another little secret is that back then, I've been receiving from Avex actual lists of cool words to use for, you know, it's true, they used to call it easy English for Japanese listeners, you know.
Number one. I remember that song by Fastway.
Yeah.
Have there been any Japanese vocal versions of any of your songs?
Yes, many of them. But as you might know, they tend to keep some English, and on the other hand, they tend to translate some of the lyrics, some sentence in Japanese. They make a mixture, you know, a mix. So it's fun. It was funny for me for the very first time to hear that. But now I'm used to, of course. So, yeah, fire. I have many, many fire words in my titles. And, you know, love and, you know, something very easy for the people to understand. Back then, but now it's changed a little bit. They're learning English over there in Japan.
If there's a visual imagery and aesthetic that goes with your work, how would you describe that?
How you mean that? A visual image while I'm working?
Yeah, like often like art and design goes with music. When people hear your music, like what kind of a visual image do you think they think and you
I'd like them to have this image myself working in a studio and composing on my guitar, on my piano. This is, you know, when I was a young kid, that was my image for myself in the future, you know, and being a composer and having those masses. That's the young kid dream, of course. The big mass of people singing my own tracks and words, and I did it, you know. So that's the image that I'd like the people could have by listening to my tracks.
When you were growing up, did you learn to play guitar and piano like a classical music on piano?
Not classical, but jazz and rock and blues and all that. I've been studying theory and music theory for years, for 11 years.
So was the 1990 was the official start of, this is the start of your career? Were you in a band prior to that?
Yeah, I had a couple of bands called, the very first was called Layout. The second one was called Brando, like Marlon Brando. And my mind was there, man. I was in rock, totally up to my neck in rock, and I didn't expect at all that that my career could have been like this in dance music. What? No way. But you know, this is it, man. I don't know what to say about that, but that's the story.
How close are you friends with the band Bulldozer? And I noticed Bulldozer had a new release that you produced, actually.
Yeah. I've been producing a couple of albums, maybe three albums for them. The very first was a live album recorded in Poland called Alive in Poland, 1989, mm-hmm. I think. And, you know, I've been the producer for them and friend. And they were used to call me the fourth Bulldozer as a member, but I never played actually with them, but I've been producing them, and I'm the one who convinced them to reunite back again in 2008 or 2009. Then we got Jennifer Bedden, Michael Jackson guitar player, here in my studio having some session for the album, and Billy Sheehan from Mr. Big. And it was a great reunion album, and I'm very satisfied with that.
You've also produced work with Japanese artists like Ayumi Hamasaki and Every Little Thing. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, but just remixing tracks. Just remixing tracks.
Mm. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Avex asked me to remix some tracks from the J-pop, you know, scenario, you know what I mean? Back in early 2000, maybe. Yes, sooner or later. Yeah. More or less it was that time back then. And it was the greatest. It was about the greatest hits from Ayumi Hamasaki and the Globe and a lot of J-pop artists. I was very honored, man, because when you talk about these kind of artists, we are talking about people selling millions of copies, man. Still now, with the internet and technologies, but in Japan, the CD is still on, you know what I mean? Not too much, but more than in the rest of the world. So, you know, I was very honored about that, and still I am. It's a flagship on the list in my career, you know.
I have two different experiences with your music in social life. Now, if I've discovered your music, of course, using the internet, and I became a fan, got all your records. But you know, having girlfriends that know of your music, and then going once to an Asian club.
Say hello to her, anyway.
Yes.
I will. You said it twice, so hello, please.
Oh, yes. But she, we went to this one club, and they were playing, I don't think it was your track, it might have been one of the older Eurobeat songs from, like, late or early 90s. I can't recall. I think it was, like, by Syro, I Want Your Fire. I don't know. One of those tracks. But then when I was recently, this might have been a year ago, I was at a video game convention, some anime convention. They were playing, I think it was several DSX tracks and Dijo tracks, and it was just this strange cosplay event. So you have these two different worlds where, you know, it's completely normal in the Asian scene. You know, that's what dance music is. But in the American environment, it's kind of materialistic, as in it represents some kind of anime, or you're role-playing as an anime, especially that it's been released. Some of your songs have been in the anime Initial D, and on some of the tracks, they'll make references to characters in Initial D. How do you feel when somebody puts your music and says, this is songs that would be in an anime or a futuristic Japan?
Okay, very complex question. When I started Eurobeat activity, there was no anime around. It was just discos in Japan, I mean. No Eurobeat around the world, you know. Just Italo dance, but no Eurobeat around the world. So the very first time Alberto Contini came to me and said, you know, there's a producer, an anime producer. At that back then, they call it cartoons, not yet anime. And they want your track for the cartoons. What? No way! I'm a musician, man. I'm a guitar player, man. No way! No, no, fuck. You know something? I was embarrassed, but there was the business, you know. And my skill, my merit, back then at that time was that I was so smart that I said, yeah, you know, I said, yes, okay, let's do that. Let's see what's going on. And so in that prime time for me in the anime, cartoons anime world was kind of, you know, surprised. Didn't expect that. But after a few months, the royalties came in, you know what I mean? So the money at that time for me was very much important because I was still in rock with my mind. So at that time, I didn't care too much about the fact that my music was involved with anime and cartoons. But nowadays, I'm very proud of it because I'm getting old and I'm learning and that it doesn't matter the media, it doesn't matter the way, you know, the device. But what is very important is communicate your music and your art to the people, out for the people. And anime is a very useful way to expand the music in general. And Eurobeat, especially, you know what I mean. So now I'm very open-minded, but in Japan, it's not so popular now. It's much more popular the Eurobeat anime combination outside Japan because they exploited very much back in the days this kind of a combination. You know what I mean. So. Now is happening now outside Japan. It's weird, I know, but it's happening now and let's say in the last 2 years. But it's weird, like I said before, it's weird. But in the rest of the world, it's happening now, not in the 90s.
Eurobeat was more popular in Japan. What has sort of been the direction of music in Europe? I know there's been sort of like Euro dance and Euro pop and Euro kind of the techno music, which was big in the 90s. Was that sort of the dominant music back then while you were working?
It's not easy to answer this question. It's after the 90s in Japan, that was a kind of tired period of time. No more discos. People was interested in something else than mobiles, games. Akihabara, the block, the big block in Tokyo, totally changed its nature. It was known as the electronic city. Now, back after that, it changed into the manga city, you know, anime city, part of Tokyo. So
you're saying the district of Tokyo that used to cater to music changed to a district that catered to manga?
Not to music. It was that district was
what's the name of that district?
Akihabara. Yes, it was known as the electronic city. You know, I was there many, many, many times, and I've seen like motherboards, computer motherboards in the middle of the street, selling people selling out motherboards. You know, incredible, like a Blade Runner movie. You know, something.
Oh like yeah, this. I'm looking at pictures like that. It does look kind of like that. Did you ever get your picture on one of those big signs?
Of course I did. Of course.
Okay,
I did.
You gotta send it to me so I can use it for the cover of the show.
Okay, I'll try to find it to have it back from my archive.
But what I see right now is a big anime image. The leader, did you get a chance to check that place out when you were in Tokyo?
I know where it is, and I've seen it before. And it is a very interesting place. I love it. It's definitely, it is the technological center of, especially a very futuristic or even said cyberpunk place.
Exactly. Yes, absolutely, yes. But recently, and when I say recently, I mean in the last 10 years, it totally changed. Now you only see manga and anime, ex-cartoons, very classic cartoons like Godzilla, you know, Jigrobo, you know, something like that. Very, very, very classical stuff. And, you know, it's totally changed. And I was shocked to see that because, you know, what Akihabara is not, it's not there anymore, that Akihabara. There's a new Akihabara. And Japan is changing very, very fast, more than any other place in the world, you know?
It seems that I love the Super Eurobeat series, and I have a majority of those CDs just laying around, and
okay,
I love...
Okay, thank you very much for that.
I always look out and get the new one. It seems that, okay. too, that the Eurobeat series, as it evolved, especially with the newer albums coming out, the target audience seems to be of women. I don't know, or the club-like girl that's into a garuru fashion, or some kind of post-gongoro fashion. Have you studied the people that listen to your music in the Japanese market?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't, because it's very difficult to do that. In the last Nikko tour in Japan, I've seen... Many girls, but also many old friends, many old fans, male ones. So I couldn't say that. But personally, when I compose tracks, I don't really think about, oh, I'm going to do that for women. I'm going to do that for men, because out there are many, many female, many males. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I just compose tracks and I see, okay, that's for a girl. That's it. So it's very casual.
I love Clara Moroni. That's how you pronounce her name, right?
Oh, I love her too.
She was in Patrick Miller Fest in Mexico, so close to where I am. And she played live for only 15 minutes. And I love it when she sings on some of your tracks. It's just, I don't know, I start to associate her as well with Dijo with your music.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. You know, Clara is exactly like Maurizio is for male part of my job. You know, Clara is the best female singer ever I've been working with in my whole career. You know, when you compose a track and you just imagine her voice out of a microphone into your loudspeaker in the studio, right? Just
yes.
Just imagination. Then she comes up and just a few minutes before warming up, then she starts singing. And wow, that's exactly how I have been imagining that. And, you know, fuck, man, that's something that you can't explain in words. You know what I mean?
The same.
That's something.
The same power comes with Elena Gabi, Virginelle, and
yes, absolutely.
She has that same voice too.
Yeah, I've been, as you know, I've been working with her many years, but I have to say that my favorite is Clara still now. But my singer, my main female singer now, which is Roberta Grana. Mm-hmm. is very close to her, very, very close to her, in my opinion. I have very, very much satisfaction from her voice in my studio, from my loudspeaker. And my very first impression is the one, you know, when is what that makes me say, wow. You know, the very first sentence, the very first line she sings is like, wow, I got it. You know, I got the track, I got the key, and I got the point. I'm on the right page, you know, and that's the human talent, man.
You started your current label, Sinclair Style, in 2008. Is your current music, is it still in the Eurobeat style of your work in the 90s? And how has the sound changed since then?
Yes, absolutely. You know, I'm used to say that Sinclair Style, as a name of my company, was not chosen at random, you know. And, you know, my sentence in my site is dream free, play Sinclair, you know. This is a kind of take it or leave it. Because my way to Eurobeat is, okay, this is me. This is my way to do it. If you don't like it, I'm happy with that. But if you love it, if you love it, if you like it, you're going to be in love with that for the rest of your life. Because there's this a very unique way in it to do that, you know. So the Sinclair style, as you said, in Eurobeat, on Eurobeat and or on Hypertechno, it's you can always recognize it, you know what I mean, because there's me in it, you know what I mean, and this is my secret key, not so secret, but that's my key.
Yeah, you know, there's also other American outlets that have been trying to emulate your music. I'm thinking of two labels, Disco Warp and Odyssey Eurobeat. They seem to be from America out in the Midwest, and they're trying to emulate your style. I think there's a band called Initial P, too, like Initial D. And they're more associated with the anime convention side, but they're quite aware of the Eurobeat Sinclair style music, and they're trying to emulate it, which I think is really funny, according to an American punk imitation, which is funny.
But, you know, I'm happy with that. Very happy with that. Because this means that you have left a sign, a small sign in music history, you know. And I'm happy with that. I feel very much to encourage them to go on their way, but to do it their own way, you know what I mean? Emulation is never something to go for. Like I said, when I started my own way. My own way. I put guitars in it, techno, bass drums, in the Eurobeat back then, 1991, you know. I had many rejected tracks from Avex because they were focused on the sound, you know, more than on melody lines. And sometimes happened that they took some tracks of mine like, wow, this is too much, man. But fighting a little bit, I was, you know, I've been trying to convince them that they could bet on it, on those tracks, and they did. For example, Burning Love, you know that track?
Yes, I
from
love
DSX.
It.
Okay, Burning Love, that's another little secret. They first rejected the track. They said, oh, this kick drum is too much. This sounds like techno track. Yes, exactly. That's the point, man. No, this is too much. The DJ is going to refuse that. No way. Put it out. Just put that fucking track out. Believe me. Trust me. But they say, oh, well, this is too much, too strong. Put that out. And they did. And the DJs, especially John Robinson, you guys know John Robinson?
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
John Brunson is a very good friend of mine, and a special DJ too. he started my own tracks in techno and hypertechno field and Eurobeat too, and he was the first one that realized that something was changing from Italy into the high energy Eurobeat stuff, getting harder and stronger, and so I've been fighting all the time, till now actually, with all A&Rs, all A&Rs teams, since the beginning, because I'm challenging the audience and all the makers around me. Like I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna put guitars in it. I'm gonna put a bass drum like this, very loud hi-hat, and all that. And first, that sounds very strange, very hard, very unusual. But then, they became classics. You know, like exactly Burning Love, or even Night of Fire. Not a little secret. Maybe you might know that it's not a secret. Avex, at the very first time they received a Night of Fire, they rejected. Think about that. They reject Night of Fire. Yeah, it was rejected. They didn't understand the potential of that track. They said, pass. Let's pass it. What? Are you crazy? Huh. I've been remixing it in 3 hours. And what you know?
I've noticed.
Did you hear that?
Like several different versions of Night of Fire. Like there's one that goes right to the vocals. And then there's some that are really more fast-paced and that are really...
Yeah, something like that. Yes, yeah. Not several, but a couple of them. And I still have it, the original one. It's something like an X-Files piece, you know what I mean? It's very locked up in my studio. But I still have it. And, you know, probably it sounds much better than the one you know. You know what I mean? It's crazy, but I don't know why they rejected. But after that, I've been fighting for a couple of days, and said, you know, what are you doing? What are you saying? This is a great track, but they didn't get it at first.
Do you have a favorite brand of a synthesizer and bass drums that you like to work with?
Well, each and every Roland stuff on earth, and you know. All the Junos, all the JX, all the JDs, all the JPs, all drum machines, 08, 09, Roland, they have the sound, man, for the dance, for the dance music, for also for pop. I love it. It sounds real. It sounds not really analog, but it sounds real, like an acoustic instrument. Not exactly, in the middle, a combination of them. And as a rocker, coming from rock, when I started producing dance music, that the Roland stuff was the only way for me to go on, you know, and having being satisfied, fully satisfied with the sound.
I notice you use the Norlead. I see that a lot in your videos. I think maybe...
Yes.
That, is that like the main Eurobeat lead thing? When you come up with a new idea, you go straight to it and make up a Eurobeat lead that's really out there and go, I always think that's the instrument, a Norlead 4 or something.
Yeah, the Norlead 1, actually. Ah. That's my favorite. Yeah, I have three of them. But, okay, I'm going to give you guys a little secret of my working process. Just for you, between you and I. My synth phrase are always five layers, not less than five layers. You know what I mean? Two high octave, two low octave, and one in the middle. That's my key. That's my signature layer. Real, actual, hard stuff. Hardware, you know, no plugins, no virtual instrument, no bullshit. And I still record that in analog first, analogic, you know what I mean? Then I put it on digital, of course, in my DAW. but I'm still using the very low delay and the phase changes in between the transfer, you know, from the analog sound to the digital platform. So that's my secret key. Of course, you got to be ready with your ear, and you need to have the taste built in to do that. So this is a secret, but this is not a secret. You know what I mean? It's not easy to do it.
Your latest songs, I think I was found this on the Sinclair Style YouTube, like Minimal Love by Natalie. It's loud. It's like da 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 da, and it seems that
sort of like the hyper techno, which is a bit harsher than the Eurobeat.
Yeah, and this new Eurobeat that Sinclair is making, especially coming from the analog point of view, and if he's saying five layers, you know, it's this huge, like, this ceramic, but it's also, it works at the same time, and it doesn't sound messy. It sounds very musical and very of, it's great, and it's fantastic. I feel like maybe if you just plugged in your guitar to a synthesizer, you would get the same.
You got it.
Is that a secret? Use a mini guitar? Do you use a mini?
That's the way. You got it, bro. You got it, guys. Exactly the point is that one. I'm from rock, again, and steel. So that's the way to record guitars. You know what I mean? Having thick patterns of guitars, and you can obtain it. You can get it with a sort of doubling. You know what I mean? But when the pick, the sound of the pick, if you double it, can be a little bit confused, like you said. So with MIDI system and in a digital environment, you can do it much better than a live guitar. And so you can layer, you know, sounds, but you have to be careful not to make a mess of it, you know, out of it. So you got it. You exactly got on the point.
We are getting close to the end of the show. Brat, is there anything you'd like to add about your work that we didn't get a chance to touch upon?
I don't know, but if there's something else that we would like to ask me, no problem.
I feel as though your music is special because we were talking about this earlier. That has to do with a lifestyle, right? It seems that I was an Asian studies student, and I've learned mostly your music through Asian studies and understanding, you know, Japanese, Chinese, and Korean people and how they go about in the street life, especially in the Tokyo area. And in that 90s period, especially Eurobeat was associated with the whole gangro culture. I mean, even to some extent, there is this kind of street or I'll say the word, like a prostitution or some kind of the equivalent of hip hop or rap you have in America. And your music has that attitude, right? It has this certain attitude, Eurobeat, it's coming from. And it could represent or be associated from someone in America that's doing as anime cosplaying to I feel that someone in the street, you know, in Japan could be like this hip, dark skin, blonde hair prostitute or something like that. I think it's punk. It's really cool. And I think like, as you said before, that's just me
never
loving
heard,
your
like,
music.
Never heard something like that on my music before.
That's
man.
What
but,
I think. That's but, what I get.
I'll take it as a compliment, of course. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for that. But I don't know, man. I had many tracks used as a backtrack for porn movies. So I'm not surprised about that.
Were they Japanese porn?
No Japanese porn.
Interesting.
American ones, yeah, American porns. But you know, have you never seen Japanese porns?
Oh, I've seen them before, but it's not like I mean, I've certainly studied it and know about the backing interest. I mean, but the thing is, it's I'm just saying is that it has this. There's certain a style people associate music with certain lifestyles, and how I get from your music is that I feel that there's a certain new aesthetic that's happening, especially this especially, you know, half the Japanese don't even know it's music made by Italian people. And yet there's a mm-hmm. synergy between the West and the East. And I feel as though there's
You're right.
A new culture.
Latin. We are Latin people. So probably your feeling that you are feeling is coming from is something synergetic, is something coming out from our soul, from our being so open-minded, you know, maybe having some sex appeal naturally built in, you know what I mean? So probably you have that right. I never been thinking about this, but during my Eurobeat, but you're probably right. You're probably right. Yeah, it could be.
Brad Sinclair, I would like to thank you for being on the show. It's been an excellent show. We're both big fans of your work.
Thank you very much, guys. Thank you for having me on the show, and talk to you soon.
Yes. It's nice talking to you, Brad.
Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.